and welcome to episode 275 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, writer of MI666, and joining me this week are the creator of Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And the lemon tango to our Johnny Cash, Tony Esmond.
Hey, you all right? I'm still excited. We got very excited a minute ago, didn't we?
The last hour and a half. We did. We have just finished doing an interview with Durf Back Durf. A name that a lot of our listeners are probably familiar with from the books like our friend, my friend Dharma. I always said our friend because he feels like our friend now, doesn't he?
Yeah, proper friends.
My friend Dharma and Kent State and Trashed. I know a lot of our listeners have a lot of his books and are looking forward to this. And it's a great interview. So you got...
We get into it, don't we?
We
become quite intellectual and highfalutin in there.
We become normal human people.
Don't worry, we're back, to normal afterwards.
Yeah. don't worry. The bit afterwards is just still going to be nonsense.
Dross.
Because what is this show without unprofessionalism?
Trashed. That's not a book. Seems to come to mind.
Yeah, exactly. But it's episode 275, gents.
Wow, cracking on.
That would be an anniversary in Marvel in the Bronze Age. We'd have had a double size.
Well, these days with some of the big two, every issue is an anniversary.
Yeah, if he makes five issues.
Issue 10.
How many variant covers would we have of this episode?
I'll buy a few.
Chromium fold-out holographic.
Yeah.
Or chromium fold-out holographic.
Yeah. What? I'll grow up. But yes, we're only 25 away from 300. Who would have thought it?
Yeah, I know. Incredible. It's the road. Let's call it the road to 300.
Are we beginning the road to 300 now? Are we?
Yeah, let's do it. We've got half a year to go.
Yeah. Do you think Chris? do you think Chris Rea would sing the song?
Who's Chris Rea?
For those who don't know, and I can't. Well, everyone knows "Driving Home for Christmas."
Oh, it's almost Christmas, isn't it? It's been my birthday soon.
Oh, shut up, Tony! Yeah. It's not Christmas yet.
It's almost Halloween soon. Are we doing a Halloween thing?
We are indeed. We do a Halloween episode every year.
Oh yeah,
Tony.
Of course we are. You told me about that. I forgot. Oh,
unbelievable. Do you know what I also tell you about every week, Tony?
Comic House. Yeah. You don't tell me. Dan tells me.
Well, no. Dan tells us what's on Comic House. But for those people who don't know who Comic House is. Actually, there might be a lot of people who have never listened to this show before because of this episode. Welcome.
Yeah, hello.
Yeah, you're in for a treat. But before that, this unprofessional sponsorship ad for our sponsor, Comic House, because they are an indie comic marketplace with a difference.
We apologise in advance.
Yes. We should just start every episode with, we're sorry.
Yeah, sorry about this.
Yeah. No, Comic House have a huge selection of titles on their database and on the website. If you self-publish, you can list your book on there for free and start selling like issues of your comic straight away. It's handy if, I don't know, you can't get to your local indie comic book store with some of your stock these days. But we talk about it every week. We love the Comic House app. It's only £3 a month, or probably, I don't know what that is in dollars and whatever currency you have over the... dollars, euros, whatever it is, it's an absolute steal because you can barely buy one digital comic for £3 a month these days, and you get access to an enormous library of digital indie comics, lots of UK titles, but now even more than ever, titles from all over the world are being added to it, which is brilliant to see. What stuff is on there at the moment, Dan?
We've got a little zap of Blop Shop, Mahoney's 3, The Last Stand, which is a fantastic read, Alethea Volume 3. I've read it, Volume 1 of that. That's really good. So I didn't realize there was 2 and 3 available. Oh, and we've got Teddy Boy Issue 11 and 12 from Concord Publishing, based in Hong Kong. So get your kind of manga. Is it manga or anime? I always get mixed up on that.
It's not, is it?
Anime is the animated stuff.
Animated version.
Well, it's neither because it's Chinese.
It's Chinese. There you go. That just goes to illustrate how little I know.
And how, no matter what episode it is, we need to be factually corrected on everything we say.
There's so much different genres on Comic House.
Yeah.
It's like you got
nicely done.
Yeah. Superhero, mystery, action, martial arts, slice of life, board bio. It's all on there.
Yeah. Lots of our guests, past, present, and future, have got stuff on there. So, don't know, you might look at the back catalogue and then find out more of their work on Comic House. They have a 14-day free trial. They've also got an all-ages section now, so if you don't want kids to read, let's face it, any of the comics from the host of this show,
advisable.
Then there is a parent-friendly all-ages section as well, full of amazing comics as well. So, yeah. So to find out more, go to comichouse.com and just start reading comics, because that's what this show is all about. There you go. That's not too bad, is it?
That's right.
It's like we're still on the high from being normal people, aren't we? No, we weren't that normal. Because Durf immediately realised what sort of nonsense this show is. But we're not going to mess you about any longer, because it's a fantastic chat. Like I say, we've just finished and we're still on a high from it. We talked about Kent State a couple of weeks ago. Tony recommended it on episode 273 or 2, I think it was.
Okay.
Right. A couple of episodes ago.
Yeah, a couple of episodes ago. You're going to want to read this book.
Yeah.
And if you have...
This is going to win a lot of awards this year, I'm going to say. I'm going to make that claim.
Yeah. It's certainly going to be an hour. Not awards. We don't have awards, but we're going to be
talking... Favourites.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about this book a lot more. But to find out more about that book and everything else, let's just get to the interview, shall we? Okay, this week we are very pleased to be joined by the creator behind such critically acclaimed books as My Friend Dharma, Trashed, and most recently Kent State, Four Dead in Ohio, which a book we discussed mere weeks ago.
Yeah, just a couple of weeks ago, wasn't it, dude? Yeah.
Yeah, indeed. It is our pleasure to welcome Durf back, Durf, to the show. Hello, sir.
Thanks, guys. How are you doing?
Hey, Durf. Great to have you on, man. Yeah, great. Yeah. Very excited.
Yeah. And we were speaking just before...
We're all a little bored in 2020. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Standard of excitement is pretty low.
Staring into the dead eyes of my wife, this is definitely better.
But I know a lot of our listeners were very excited by the news that you're going to be on the show. So,
really? Wow.
Yeah. You may be in the States, but this show spreads far and wide. We're constantly surprised by who listens to this show. So your books are read by... the world.
Also, this is the land of Shakespeare, Durf. You know, we know what we're talking about, right? My friend. Yeah.
You get to rise to the land of the Brexit as well.
Yeah.
Oh, just God. A simple Midwesterner. Simple Midwestern peasant.
Oh, but your books are anything but simple, though. Yeah. And we will be getting into your latest release, which, from all of us, do you say congratulations? But either way, it's a powerful book and we all love it. Tony, of course, recommended it, and me and Dan immediately just bought it.
So you bought it while I was talking about it, didn't you?
We ordered it there and then. So we'll talk about that book, and no doubt not the struggles, but the work that you put into it and some of that, you know, because there's a lot to talk about with that book from many angles. But Let's get started. I know you said before that this could be a long story, but for those who don't know, like, how did you get your start into sort of comics and eventually like doing your graphic novels and stuff? What was your origin story, as it were?
My origin story? Well, you know, I've been doing comics since I was like 5 years old, so I'm one of those douchebags. I first got published in college, actually, the college newspaper. And me and Jeff Smith, who you may know for the Bone Guy, we were both cartooning for the same paper at the same time. It was kind of a hotbed of talent. It was at Ohio State University.
Oh wow!
And it was great. And I got my start there. And then I started as a political cartoonist, believe it or not.
Is that the sort of political cartoon, sort of when it's just one image and...
There are many of them left. It's like a dead genre now.
That's before The City, then, I take it you mean, is that?
This was before The City, yeah.
Right.
And then I did that for a couple of years professionally and then got fired. for, as the editor put it, quote-unquote, general tastelessness.
Nice. Yeah, we're all about that on this show.
And then, and that's when I developed The City, which was a weekly strip, which ran in these weekly city papers we had here in the States. There was hundreds of them. Mm. They were these free papers, you know, that were stacked up in coffee shops everywhere. You trip over them as you went in and out the
one
door.
One being the Village Voice, is that right?
Or... Yeah. Village Voice was one.
Oh, we know about that one, yeah.
Do you?
We've heard about it. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's gone too.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay. Yeah. Right.
So, and the thing about these weeklies was they were this incredible spawning ground for comics. I mean, all these, they're like A-list creators now, like Chris Ware and Alison Bechdel, Matt Groening, of course, Charles Burns, on and on and on. All these, all of us started in these weekly papers strips.
Why do you think that is, though? You know, is it a real...
It's an opportunity. It's an opportunity.
Right.
And also, did you learn quite a lot about, like, storytelling and stuff, doing that sort of format? And obviously, tight deadlines
and stuff. You
know,
by that time, I had a pretty good idea of what I wanted to do. Hmm. So, I mean, I was late 20s by that point, so I'd been doing it a little while.
Right.
So it was clear in my head. I mean, there's always the... benefit of having that weekly deadline and having to produce, you know, over and over and over and over and over. Yeah. So that, I don't know if I'd call it a learning experience, but it was definitely, it was a great experience. I mean, I loved it. In the 90s, it was a lot of fun. And then, you know, newspapers ran into a wall. And so I had to figure out something new to do. And that's when I started.
I've heard you on interviews, Duff, saying, describing yourself as a restless creator. Do you think that's part of it?
Yeah. I got bored easy.
Right.
So newspapers got pretty boring for a variety of reasons. And so then I decided to bail and try really the only thing that was left, which was long-form storytelling. And it turns out I'm better at this than anything else I ever tried. So, you know. It's pretty stupid not to get involved until I'd already been working for like 25 years.
Yeah, I love the way you describe graphic novels as big ass comic books. I think that should be adopted as a phrase. Mm-hmm. Often, I think. Yeah.
Well, you know, a graphic novel is kind of it's kind of a.
We use the word poncy.
Will Eisner's the one who cooked that one up, so and he was not a ponce, but he was definitely trying to make it sound a little more important than it actually is.
Yeah, if anything that sells comics, I suppose. You know.
Yeah, he was a salesman. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
and it's that word comics which has a certain stigma with it, isn't it? You know, with the general public beyond
it does
bubble.
In the English speaking world, doesn't it?
Yeah, it seems so. Yeah,
definitely. In other countries, not at all.
Yeah,
but. We who speak this this bizarre language of yours, we are very backwards. So we're working on it.
I know Dharma's been translated all over the world. You've done Angoulême with Dharma, have you? I think, is that right?
Oh, many times. I've done like seven Angoulêmes, I think.
Yeah, they understand it. They get it over there, don't they?
Oh yeah, the French are. I mean, French comics fans are amazing, and the media and everything else. It's just like heaven.
Yeah, I mean, I went last year, and Macron. The president turned up at it. You know, you don't get that.
Yeah, I know, right? Right? Yeah. Yeah, there was some minister that came up to me, approached our booth, and I was introduced, I think, the Minister of Economy or something like that.
Right.
And, you know, I pretended to be interested, and then he wandered away.
But, did he buy a
great
book?
I love...
Yeah, make him pay.
I believe he did. Well, he was given books, let's put it that way.
Right, okay.
He did walk away with some books, which I'm sure immediately... went into the recycling pile somewhere.
Yes.
Surely not. Surely not.
Mm-hmm. But it's great. Yeah, I mean, everybody should go to Angoulême at least once in their lifetime.
Mm. I
mean,
I agree. I had an absolute blast. I've only been once, which was last year, and it was brilliant, amazing.
That was a good year to go, the Wally Wood exhibit.
And, yes, Unfortunately, we left Europe on the Saturday night. And, I remember.
Yeah.
I remember standing in a bar getting quite
Andy
drunk.
Andy Watson was one of our authors with my fellow. So we all toasted Brexit.
You weren't in the, were you in the hotel bar?
Him a Jew from the European Union.
We were in the hotel bar. I don't know if you were there, but it got a bit drunken, I've got to be honest with you. And then they cancelled our train on the way home, which caused us to panic hugely because we thought there's no more trains.
Stranded in Europe.
Yeah.
Comics and real life meet.
Yeah, exactly.
What a crazy
rare occasion.
But are places like that for you, is that sort of rejuvenating going to somewhere like that where the medium is taken so seriously?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. But there are places like that here too. I mean, there are various festivals and things where you come away just feeling, you know, you're pumped.
Mm. Do you find that's more of the independent side rather than huge sort of multimedia ones? Which, of course, you have been to as well, haven't you? I mean,
oh yeah, absolutely,
yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. San Diego is actually surprisingly good.
Okay,
because it is. It's because there's a little of everything, and if you want to find independent comics and really interesting stuff, it's there. And if you want to do just the Hall H movie star bullshit, that's there too. I mean, it's all there. New York Comic Con, on the other hand, it's just one thing.
yeah.
Some of the others, yeah.
Yeah, I guess with San Diego though, it's got such a reputation for itself because of the like you say the Hall H that a lot of people forget that there's still a lot of comics there.
Right, and they do forget. Yeah, they do forget. Yeah. But you know that doesn't mean they don't exist, right?
No. And comics fans,
and they have really great. They have really great panels at San Diego too, so those are always fun.
Oh, nice.
Okay. I recommend San Diego.
Yeah, you must have done a panel or two in your time.
Yeah, I've done quite a few. Yeah.
Have you ever done the English cons?
Yeah, I've done a few.
Have I done any English cons? I've never been invited.
We'll have a word.
Did you hear that, guys?
I hear great things about Thought Bubble, but no one's ever brought me over. So
Chloe's one of the organizers, and we know she's a listener. So there you go, Chloe. For next year,
there you go, Chloe. My daughter's name is Chloe. If that ingratiates me any further,
job done.
You're in.
There you
go. No, I'd love to come. You know, I'd like to visit as many. I've been to just about every other festival in Europe.
Yeah, Thought Bubble was the big one for us. Yeah,
I know. Yeah, I hear great things about it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So obviously, you moved on to like your work with the city, and you do a lot of web comics and stuff as well. Are you a fan of that sort of telling of comics? And I guess
it's okay. You know. Yeah. I mean, it's fine for telling. It's not fine for actually making a living.
Learning. Yeah. Yeah.
Telling, not selling. I guess.
Right. Right. I mean, you have to be willing to do certain things like, sell T-shirts and all that other, or ads and all that stuff. I have no interest in any of that. So for me, it's just a creative exercise and a way to kind of, burn off steam.
Is it almost like a little learning, a little honing ground for some comics, or do you see?
Oh, absolutely. No. Yeah. A lot of amazing talent comes out of the web.
I mean,
it's all we have left is an entry point, really.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, personally, for you, I mean, I know you've if you go to your site, you've got quite a few web comics you can read for free on there. Yeah, is that something you use to just sort of see what people like or hone the story a little bit?
Hone the story. It was what I would work for me, really.
Right.
It was me just kind of working out various projects and seeing, all right, I'll try this. And some of it was old work, and some of it actually was first published as mini comics. Which used to be a really big thing, and a lot of people came out of the mini comics area. I didn't do a lot of them. I maybe did 15, 20 mini comics, but they were great when, just to try out new things.
Cool. Yeah, we have that as a small press scene over here. Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
It varies from country to country. I mean, I'm always amazed by that some people have never even heard of mini comics. They have no idea what I'm talking about. Yeah. And other people, I know we have mini comics. It's just, it's bizarre how the comics business is so different in different places.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're very much a comics fan and a comics reader as well, and influence. So before, normally we do this after the work, but I think that before we get stuck into the work itself, I mean, what have been your influences in the comics that read, and, because I know I'm on Twitter during the session. You're a big fan of Spain Rodriguez?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Love his stuff, man, yeah.
Yeah, he was huge influence on me. A lot of people who don't know anything about comics always say, he's like a descendant of Robert Crumb, and it's like, Crumb? No,
what that is, it says it on your Wikipedia page, Durf.
Oh really, is that
I
where
think
it
that
is?
Might be the reason, man. Yeah, yeah.
Well, Wikipedia is never wrong, so
obviously. Yeah.
But it was always Spain. I mean, Spain was the guy. I didn't even read any comics when I was a teenager, but somehow I got my hands on some Spain stuff, and I was like, it's just amazing. And I followed him ever since. And then I get into the, you know, some of the European comics like Tardy and Moebius and, you know, the rest of them.
Yeah.
And Richard Corbin, he was a big influence. And,
love Corbin, man. Yeah, really good.
Yeah, so stuff like that. And then, you know, when I started making comics, I really kind of stopped reading comics. So at that point, it was just percolating on my own. And whatever influences came in from culture around me, music and, you know, art and things like that.
Because
music's a big influence, isn't it? I know you've...
Yep.
What pushes, what does music do to you that pushes you to transform it into a comic? Any idea about that?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
You know, it's just kind of the vibe. I think probably the trying to channel that, you know, so can I be, get that same level of coolness with comics that, you know, these guys are getting with music? And the answer to that, of course, is no. But, you know, you make the effort and... And I always listen to music when I'm working, so it, you know,
I suppose it's got that DIY, a lot of good music, certainly sort of punk and older music has got that DIY sense to it. I know,
absolutely,
yeah,
absolutely.
What are you listening to at the moment while you work?
To prove that I am a pretentious douchebag, I was listening to Zappa this morning, so there you
go. Which album?
The three that I have here is one's a comp called Strictly Commercial, and then Chic Your Beauty and Apostrophe.
Okay, Apostrophe is one of my favorites. Yeah, yeah, good.
Yeah,
stuff.
Well, yeah.
Yeah,
I was actually just ordering some more, so I'm super pretentious today.
I don't know if the hipsters have quite caught on to Zappa yet, have they? I don't know.
I don't know if they ever did. Yeah.
But... Yeah, yeah. I kind of like that. Yeah. Yeah, if they ever do, I'll drop him like a hot rock.
Is that the only way you'll ever drop Zappa, Tony?
I believe so. Although I did read his autobiography and I was slightly disillusioned with his want for commercial success that I didn't listen to him for about maybe a day.
Yeah. Oh dear. Yeah, so obviously you're, like you say, you're influenced by the culture around you, and with the work that you're doing, certainly with my friend Dharma and Kent State, with the historical aspects of them, you're obviously researching and you're looking into things. It's not something like, I can't imagine doing a work like Kent State and then stopping it just to have a read of the Avengers for 5 minutes. Do you know what I mean? You can't, you know, the brain, to switch the brain like that, you know. So when you're in deep with a project like that, I guess in some ways comics are far away, aren't they? Because the focus is the work and
the videos of the event and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the focus is the storytelling.
Yeah.
So, you know, comics are, since that's the way I tell stories, no, comics are not, I don't think they are far away. I mean, I'm always thinking in those terms. So everything funnels into the storytelling, all the research, all the, you know, it's like right from the very beginning, how am I going to tell this story?
Mm. Yeah.
And so then I start researching to try to figure it out. And, you know, sometimes it takes a while.
Mm. What inspires you to choose like the subjects that you've chosen for your books?
You look for stories. Well, you look for good stories, first of all, period.
Yeah.
And these are great stories. And I guess I have enough wherewithal that I can recognize that. That's the important thing. And I like stories that haven't been told or haven't been told in, you know, this way.
Yeah.
And that certainly applies to Kent State. We don't really have a visual narrative that depicts what happened here. And I think that was an opportunity. With My Friend Dahmer, it was something completely different. With Thrashed, it was something completely different. I mean, these are things that nobody knew about. So that's what I look for.
I suppose the thing with Dahmer is it's personal, isn't it? And that really comes across.
Very personal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is not my normal thing. I mean, I don't do autobio.
Yeah.
I've never been comfortable with it. And I just don't, you know, want to, like, you know, throw all my persona onto the page. I mean, that's just not what I want to do. I mean, if the people who can do that, great, more power to them, but it's just not my thing.
Why not, do you think, Durf? Is it the giving away of the personal life to the
probably public? Yeah. I mean, I've also been, you know, I've been with my wife now for like 30 some years, and she would kill me if I did anything about our relationship in comics form. And since, you know, that's pretty much my whole life, I mean, that kind of eliminates everything. You've got my friend Dahmer, and that was before her, and that's about it.
Yeah. Right. So, and for Kent State, she was a self-proclaimed comics widow, as it says.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. That's often how we describe our partners on this, actually. Really? I've got to be honest with you. Yeah.
I think it's a fairly common species.
Yeah. Because I, for those that don't know Dahmer, I don't want to say Dahmer was very personal, but Dahmer, for those that haven't read it, he was somebody you knew at high school. Is that right?
Yeah. Right. Junior high and high school. So.
Yeah.
12. So from age 12 to age 18.
Wow. Okay. But the reason I sort of segue between that and Kent State is do you put yourself in at the start of Kent State? So
I did.
You, isn't it? Yeah.
My editor kind of pushed me to do that.
I wondered about that, yeah.
Oh, so that wasn't originally part of the plan of the book then?
Yeah, I was waffling about that. He wanted, because I do have that connection, you know, just that kind of loose connection. I think it's effective because it establishes the beginning of the story, which is, you know, is important. And in a kind of a unique way. So I was okay with it. But he, you know, they also wanted me to loop back around at the end and wrap it up with me again as an adult. And I didn't do it. I said, nah.
Yeah, I can agree with you on that, man, because you're making it almost about yourself there, surely.
Right. Yeah, that was not the intention. And, you know, it quickly falls away after that. Yeah. I mean,
it's the perfect sort of way that you've used it in this book, because you immediately dropped into the place and time without having to do, let's say, the Star Wars beginning scrawl of, you know, what everything is. You know, you dropped into, like, the feeling and the emotion through the eyes of this child.
Kid who's, like, surprised by the soldiers, and it gives you that shock effect. And
he's got a Mad magazine in his hand. He's got a Mad magazine in his hand.
Yeah, exactly.
Mad magazine, absolutely.
Yeah.
But the basic premise of the story is that I show it through the eyes and the experiences of the four people who were cut down. So the reader is put on the ground with those four people, and just, you know, we walk through the story with them. So moving away from that, I mean, that was always my original premise. So I didn't want to get away from that in any way or you know, impede it.
Because it is a book about the victims. It is. We've discussed on air and off air about this whole, I mean, we talk about pacing and the way a comic is laid out, but the pressure cooker effect that you have on your book is quite startling.
God,
it doesn't happen for about 150 pages, is that right?
Get to the shootings?
Yeah.
Right, but it's 4 days of escalating tensions, so... I wanted to get across the effect of this kind of this boulder just rolling down a hill and just picking up speed, and no one can stop it. And
and you really do. I suppose
you've got that with a hit, something that everyone knows at least part about. Even in the UK, we know partly about it, but we had no idea of that. And you've always got that on the horizon, haven't you? I knew that was coming for the whole book, you know, and you feel it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I didn't know so much about it, actually. I don't know how in my life I've... Me and Dan, we knew...
Well, why would you? I mean, it's not...
I'm substantially older
than people here. Even people here, I mean, they know something about it, but they don't know much about it. So there's a lot of opportunity there to really surprise people with how this story unfolds.
Yeah.
They didn't realize there were these 4 days of escalating tensions and all the politics and all that stuff. They have no idea. So
I did see a documentary on National Geographic before I read it, and I couldn't believe some of the video testimonies of people who lived in the town saying, oh, they should have done more shot more. And I was like, oh my God, I can't believe it. But then when you read your book, we're getting there now.
That's the pressure, isn't it? You're talking this book that's obviously you've taken years for you to create is suddenly seems very real now, doesn't
relevant
it?
Relevant again.
Yeah. Well, when I started it, I felt it was relevant. I didn't think it was going to become this relevant.
Right.
Much to my horror, it has really become like we're just on the knife edge of another one. And I'm amazed it hasn't happened yet.
Honestly. We've had it in Tokyo, and then it's kind of come to the States. I feel like there's a theme between Kent State and my friend Dahmer, and that's the system breaking down and not working with Dharma.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's exactly.
Not identifying what he's going, what the problem is going with, and just kind of not addressing it correctly. In the same with Kent State.
And in both cases, the end result of those failures is tragedy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think we'd learn that lesson, don't you?
Yeah.
I mean, it's very strange for us in the UK because most, I mean, the majority of our police don't carry firearms.
Right.
You know, we don't really see the army out in the streets unless they're, you know, helping with COVID testing. You don't really, it is unusual for us.
Tell it to the Irish.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bit different.
But there is a whole, it's an incredibly different place over there. But yeah.
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 There was when you mentioned the ratcheting up of tensions, there was one bit that shocked me apart from the end where there's the gunfire is when the National Guardsmen are trying to corral the students into their homes. And there's the students trying to get in through the window because they're so desperate. Right. And one of them starts stabbing them with a bayonet.
Yeah.
And I was like, my God. So did you speak to someone where that happened to, or was that an eyewitness
account? That's from the account of the guardsman that I used. That's his account, and he describes it very vividly, with really very little regret or second guessing. Wow. So yeah, no, that comes directly from a guardsman. Yeah, they were at one point they just went over the top, and no one really reeled them in.
Well, some of them were ex-veterans, weren't they? Like
absolutely. Been in Vietnam, ex-veterans. No, I mean, maybe the older ones.
Yeah.
Back then, you know, I mean, the war was ongoing, the Vietnam War. So if you were in the military, you were in Vietnam.
Yeah.
Right.
These guys were something different. So these were like amateur, you know, second string soldiers who were trying to stay out of Vietnam. But some of them were hard asses. Actually, most of them. The most common full-time job for most of them was law enforcement. So these were like all small town.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Gotcha.
Deputies, things like that. So they had that attitude, you know, that kind of chip on their shoulder. Yeah.
Yeah.
So with this, obviously, when we've talked about research and like the interviewing people, obviously it's a tragic event, but obviously how much, and the book itself has a lot of, written pieces and prose pieces. This book actually works very much as an educational book. I know we're talking about comics and graphic novels or whatever you want to call it, but this also feels like something that hopefully someone at a university would give to their students to say, read this because this is important. And like,
That'd be awesome, especially if it's like, you know, hey, You lecture hall of 400 people, please go out and buy this book now. I mean, that would be great.
Yeah. And I think that partly that's helped because certainly as throughout the book, you take these moments just to stop and give factual accounts of this is what this place is. This is what this means. You know, what do these letters mean?
Is everything.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a long time ago and there's a lot of backstory and there's a lot of side stories and all of his stuff. I had to work into the narrative without slowing down the narrative. That was the tricky part.
Did things occur to you? Did you find out things as you were fully into the drawing stage where you thought, oh, right, I missed that. That needs to be included. That always happens.
Yeah.
There's one moment where one of the army people said, oh, have you heard, or one of the police says, have you heard they're putting LSD in the water? It's stuff like that. So it's almost like a little aside that, it's probably quite important, you know?
Yeah, sure, yeah. Well, paranoia plays a big role here, as it does today.
Yeah.
You know, just these wild rumors and escalating bullshit from, you know, one side or the other that to further their own agenda.
Yeah.
And it got out of hand.
Yeah. Did you worry a lot about portraying something so important? I mean, did you redraw or did you just sort of spend more time than you would normally about drawing it or portraying what happened to these people? Some of whom I'm guessing are still alive.
Well, I mean, there was some motivation there to be sure. I mean, I live not far from Kent.
Right.
Maybe 40 minutes drive from here.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people who were there. So, you know, I wanted to honor their experience and what they, you know, suffered, definitely. So there was motivation there. But, you know, I mean, I always try to do that. Every story I've done, I try. to get it right. You know, that's important to me.
Yeah. And this is also an historical moment, and like a real sort of telling of a real life moment. I don't think we've had too many times on this show when we've been able to talk to a creator about such things. So when it comes to like research and interviewing people, I mean, you've got to, you know, how did you go about that and like finding out? And I know you were going to like newspaper articles and you were researching everything, as well as interviewing people from all sides, wasn't it? Because it's very important to you that you get the whole
that
picture.
Really comes across, man. Yeah, I was really impressed with that. Yeah,
right. Mm. I wanted to get different viewpoints and different experiences more. I mean, I'm not necessarily just, you know, that kind of, you know, the bullshit cable news thing where you want to get, you know, two people from the opposite spectrums yelling at each other. I mean, that's not it's not really what I was after, but I was curious about experiences. So yeah, I did talk to some guardsmen. You know, I was actually, my degree is in journalism, believe it or not.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, I was a journalism major in college.
I think
college,
that comes across in this book.
I know. I mean, this is the way I learned to tell stories. So it's what I've always done when researching comics, even for fiction. I use these same techniques, just because, not because I'm, you know, it's a superior way or anything, just because that's the only way I know how to tell a story.
Yeah.
So it's my own limitations here, that not because it's a superior method. I think it does work well. I mean, obviously, in a nonfiction
it's powerful. Yeah. There's nothing more powerful than facts, like cold facts. Yeah.
And you can't write this stuff. We were talking about this earlier. No. Things happen. You think, I've never thought of writing that in a story.
Well, that's why you got that. You know, a buttload of footnotes in the back drive that home. You know, I mean, you may disagree with my conclusions or how I portrayed something, but okay, here's where it came from. You know, bam, there it is. Yeah. I mean, it's literally panel by panel.
Yeah, the annotations in this sort of thing has got to be important for people who might come back to you later and say, well, that's not true, or something like that. You know.
Yeah, I haven't gotten too much of that. I was surprised. I thought that I would get. Because this is still a very contentious event here,
right?
Politically, you know.
Yeah.
And I thought I would get a lot more. People would be yelling at me more, but they really, maybe they're too obsessed with the election here. I don't know, but there has been a lot of that.
That's the thing.
I got more yelling over my friend Dahmer.
Really? Okay.
Okay.
For what reason?
Really?
Well, you've got these, you know, these I'll call them serial killer fans. Who have invented kind of this entire urban legend around Jeff.
Yeah.
And I kind of popped that bubble, and so I got a lot of blowback from that.
Interesting.
That is a culture of people, isn't it? I mean, you can't switch on the TV without, you know, even at like 10 o'clock in the morning, an advert for he was a mass murderer and she fell in love with him. And you're like, what the hell is this?
Yeah. There's always documentaries on about serial killers. I bet you can go on a channel right now and find one.
Yep.
They love them.
Netflix is about to do a Dahmer series. I'm like, oh, Christ.
Oh, really? Okay. I'd recommend the Dennis Nielsen that's just come out with David Tennant in, if you get a chance to see that.
Yeah, watch that. Yeah.
Very good. Yeah, really good. I've got some friends who knew him, and very like him. Yeah.
You know, not surprisingly, I get very little enjoyment out of watching stuff about serial killers.
Yeah.
You know, I live that. I don't really need to.
You're not a serial killer. Let's point that out.
No,
to the public.
I don't really need to watch it for entertainment.
Yeah. Right. I mean, you're dealing. I mean, just with Dahmer and Kent, you're dealing with quite heavy subject matter, serious subject matter, important subject matter. But with that in mind, though, what helps you get out of that mind when you need to, when Dirt Back Dirt needs to relax and just put
enough of drawing crowd scenes?
Crowd scenes. How do you relax?
Well, in 2020, I don't.
No, before 2020, how did you relax?
You know, the book trips really helped a lot, you know. I would spend like, since my friend Dahmer came out, I've been spending about a quarter of the year in Europe.
Oh, wow.
Just on tour.
Oh, nice.
So, you know, that's fun. It makes it sound like I just do these heavy books, but I also do comedies.
Yeah.
So I kind of change it up, and that's a real relief just to like, you know, do a funny book, It's not so serious.
Yeah.
I'll probably do a comedy next, but
yeah, I was going to ask about the next thing. It's got to be a change of pace. You can't.
Yeah, it probably will be. Yeah, I'm still kicking around ideas, but it's really hard to focus this year.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I think.
And the book just came out, so I'm doing my best to promote it by.
Yeah.
Talking to people like us.
Yeah, well, certainly a lot of our listeners have bought it. There's been some talking about it on the Facebook, and
people
have been posting pictures of it. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. And I
think the first edition's about sold out. So
I saw you post that yesterday. Yeah, great stuff. Yeah,
yeah. So yeah, it's selling okay. I mean, it'd probably sell a lot better in a normal year, but who knows if we'll ever have another normal year.
Yeah,
maybe this is the new normal.
This is the normal. When you started conceptualizing the book to arriving in your hands, what was the turnaround time for that, Dev?
This book took 4 years.
Wow.
So okay. two years researching and then 2 years to draw it, which is too long, but that's what it took.
Yeah, but that's 2 years before a pen goes to paper to actually draw.
Right. Well, I mean, you're thinking about things and you're making notes and sketches and things like that.
Yeah, good,
yeah.
But, yeah, it took a long time.
Up with the spinning off stories about fantasy off the top of your head. And you have to put minimal research in relation. So
it does need
the relation, the research.
Yeah, I always think that's why people...
those guys, the Image DC, whatever, those guys, I mean, you're talking like 5 or 6 people on a single book, so...
Yeah.
I always think that's why people like writing science fiction and superhero stories. They don't have to do any research.
They don't have to do any
make up the name of some fucking planet.
The Zorgs can't do that. How do you know? I just made them up.
Yeah.
You're writing off some creativity pretty easily there, but
You have to
dismiss consistency. So.
That's us. Yeah.
Yeah,
I'll tell you from a nerdy point of view, but like the lover of books, the print. So you've got on this book, for people who haven't seen it, you've got the Kent State dust jacket, but underneath you've also got the hardback, you've got a huge crowd scene drawn, which is absolutely lovely.
Yeah,
when I saw
them, they do. Abrams does a beautiful job publishing books.
Yeah,
it's one of the things I like about them.
I mean, they took that's one of the interior pages they used for the cover, and it's a splash page. It's a motley crew of pages they could have picked from, because you've got some beautiful, just standalone splash pages on here.
I love splash pages. I'm really too much probably, but I really love them. That's kind of the Kirby influence there.
Okay,
surprisingly.
Do you find it helps the pacing, Durf?
I really love the way that Jack used to do that. You know, the splash page of those big double page spreads he used to do that really just kind of make a visual statement in the story, or, you know, this is, you want to highlight something like this is important.
Yeah.
The way that I pace stories, I start the chapter with a splash page. I end the chapter with a splash page. So I have always done that, but, I just love them. I think they're, I don't think they're indulgent. I mean,
No,
they focus you into the moment, don't they, a lot of the time?
Right.
Especially like the double splash that is the book cover of the guards just opening fire,
Oh, right. Well, that's the pivotal moment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The pisser about the cover was, you'll notice that it's flipped from the way the book, because the action of a cover, I only learned this when I was actually doing the cover. The action of the cover has to point toward the opening edge. This is like some steadfast book review. So I had to flip it, but that meant I had to redraw one of the figures to get, the gun in the right hand, because he was left-handed, and it's like, oh, crap, this took a lot longer than I thought it was going to. But these are the little aggravations of finishing a book.
That psychological thing about shooting towards the page being opened, almost, isn't it? It's like, I get you.
Yeah. But they want it.
Obviously, you're all pen and ink as well, aren't you? You're all original. Mm-hmm. So
you're not a big lover of the Cintiq. Am I right in saying that from previous interviews?
I use an Apple Pencil and an iPad Pro to do the finishes.
Right.
I'm not a lover of the Cintiq. No, I prefer. I just like the physical act of drawing. You know, the pen dragging over a piece of paper. It's calming. It's satisfying. It's something I like doing.
Yeah.
I have no interest in doing it on a Cintiq. I'm not a Luddite. I mean, I've been using the Mac for a billion years, but
yeah, right.
And like I said, I have my Apple Pencil, which I love, but no, I just like having that. And you know, you've got a nice original that you can also cash in on someday.
Indeed. Exactly.
Yeah.
Do you sell them? Do you through your site?
I've sold not all everything. Like I've sold nothing off my friend Dahmer.
Right.
The other books, I've sold a lot. There's a couple places in Europe, a couple places in Paris that have sold a lot of my originals, in New York. Yeah, you know, it's fine. I mean, it's, you know, another way to make a little money doing this bizarre yeah. Profession.
Yeah, and you've got 250 pages of comics
here. There's a lot here if I choose to sell any. Yeah. Yeah. Right now, they're all at the Society of Illustrators. There's supposed to be a big show in New York City, but that all got, you know, shelved because of the lockdown. Yeah. I know. They're sitting in a pile.
Oh, wow. What size do you actually do your originals?
11 by 17.
11 by 17?
Okay.
Oh, nice. Nice. I've done 11 by 17 before, and I kind of get a kick out of when things are shrunk down to the page and it makes everything look more detailed.
Well, you got to sort of anticipate that, of course. Yeah. I mean, but you have to think of that. You know, I can't put too much detail here; it'll just block up.
Yeah.
But this book particularly is very dense, so you know, there's a lot of, like, my friend Dahmer was not, which is smaller. So I drew that a little smaller. My friend Dahmer was 4 panels on a page as a general rule, and this one is, you know.
You went into six or more,
sometimes 9.
Yeah.
So it's much more dense because there was a lot more story to tell.
Plus, you're not afraid of a background.
I'm not. I think I am, but it's just that fear doesn't show on the page. Yeah, there's a lot of backgrounds in here. Yeah. That was really a visual minefield. Yeah.
With regards to drawing it, did you start at page one and finish, just work your way sequentially through, or did you jump through pages?
No. You do scene by scene, different ones in the book, so everything kind of looks the same when you get to the end, you know?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I get that.
Yeah, so you'd pencil that way, and then you also ink that way.
Gotcha. Plus, okay.
Yeah.
Because I find, like, I do a webcomic and I look at the pages I did months ago, and then the characters look different to the ones I do now.
Yeah. It takes tremendous effort to hold that line. No, that's a pretty common problem. And actually, I forget who taught me that trick. It was someone, who was it? Maybe Mike Royer, who wrote about that, you know, the Kirby Inker. I was like, oh, that's a good idea. And I tried it. Sure enough. Because, with my first book, Punk Rock and Trailer Parks, I did it sequentially, and the characters started to change, and I had to go back in and make patches and, you know, kind of make it all consistent. And I just thought, well, this sucks.
Yeah.
It's a total waste of time. So, I learned that trick pretty early on under fire. Yeah.
Nice one.
Is there anything that you would be you wouldn't want to draw? Because you're drawing, like, crowd scenes. There's obviously things that have to be historically accurate in some ways, whether it be uniforms, weapons, fashions of the time,
cars.
But if someone says, draw me a horse, would you be scared of that?
No. No, I mean, I'll draw whatever I have to tell the story. And I knew coming into this book it was going to be very, very challenging, because this is stuff I've not drawn before. And you know, you say, well, I got to do it, and you just plunge into and do it. I mean, there are pages in here that took me days to draw. Like, there's one crowd scene of a big sit-in at night on a street. That fucker took me like 3 or 4 days to draw. And I just was like, oh, God, I'm tired of drawing this crowd scene. And there's very small, you know, it's really tough to draw things very small. This book really kicked my ass. Yeah, it really did.
Did you get any from those you spoke to, maybe some witnesses or survivors of the event, and you told them what you were planning? Did any of them kind of get any of an odd reaction, or kind of what was their reaction to it?
You know, for the most part, they were very gracious and very open to it. They were, you know, they're really happy that people are telling the story, especially in a way that's sympathetic to the protesters, because, you know, they were spit on for years and years and years. And So, you know, they were very open to it. Kent is also a big, it's a big teaching college, and it's another program is their library sciences. So they have a lot of teachers and librarians who have graduated from Kent, and those two groups are very, very open to graphic novels
and comics and understand
how useful they are. So, you know, I interviewed a lot of them that were that had gone into one of those professions, and they were very positive. There were, you know, the ones who were not were there were a couple photographers who were really kind of pissy.
Why so? Yeah.
Well, I don't know. They just didn't have a high regard for comics.
Oh, yeah.
It's a legitimate storytelling art form. I don't know. They thought it was, you know, Archie and Jughead goes to the Vietnam War or something. Which would be awesome, but that's not what I was trying to do. Yeah.
They've already done a Punisher crossover. So
they meet up
with Frank in Vietnam. And
didn't they do a Walking Dead one too?
Yeah, and
I don't understand how Archie can cross over with Predator twice. Twice.
Yeah, what can you do?
Just rolling.
So
back.
Yeah, I got into it with this one photographer online. Actually, we kind of barked back at each other.
Nice. So just get back to something you said there, Durf, about the protesters being spit on for years. I think it's a phrase you just used. Do you mean by America, or do you mean in the?
I mean by media, certainly.
Right. Okay.
Largely dismissed. You know, and there was a vast cover up. I mean, this is the whole story after the book ends, which I really don't get into.
Right.
But there was like a 10-year concerted effort by the authorities to cover up what had happened, and they got away with it.
So they sort of deserved it, you mean, almost?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. That those protesters deserved to be shot.
Yeah.
Basically. Okay. That, you know, that the guard was okay. It was perfectly understandable and justifiable for them to shoot into a parking lot full of students with books in their hands.
Right.
Do you think that's any way they can accept it? Because otherwise you have to acknowledge that you've done something very, very, your country and government's done something very, very wrong.
Well, I think a lot of people accept that.
Yeah.
Now, yeah.
So, for many, many reasons. But as far as Kent State goes, you know, it was... And again, this gets back to context. I mean, that, you know, the country was literally ripping itself apart.
Yeah.
1970, much as it is now, but it was even more intense in 1970. Yeah. And it was some real question whether, you know, there was going to be civil war or what, you know, I mean, it was really bad.
Mm. It was a real call to revolution, wasn't there, back then?
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And so the opinion of mainstream America was, you know, that who cares if they're innocent? Something needed to be done, and we should have shot more of them just as a show of force, you know, as a deterrent to rising up and taking to the streets. So, I mean, that was the general attitude. It was a very popular opinion by older America.
Right.
But a lot was different then. I mean, this is again why I have to work in so much context. You know, they had a generation gap back then, which we don't have now. It was huge. I mean, it was just this cultural chasm between anyone under 30 and anyone over 30. It was like they were different species.
They even dressed differently, didn't they, from what we can see? And
and their attitudes were completely different, and it was, you know, that World War II generation and then this younger generation.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, it was very volatile. But so you got to work all that in, but I've completely forgotten what the question was now.
It was about spitting on people. But I have to say, from listening to you, mate, it's very interesting, you know, and the book's hugely interesting. Have you been approached yet to be a sort of talking head on this subject? Or
I never agree to go on.
Right. I don't blame you. But,
that. No. No.
Okay.
Yeah. I got dragged into a couple things with my friend Dahmer and really hated it. First of all, because I'm, you know, look hideous on camera and just kind of this mumbling, you know, scowling comics creator. It's like, nah, the world doesn't need to see that. Radio and podcasts are fine, but not TV.
We're quick to adopt an expert sometimes, and they're always looking for someone, aren't they, TV channels? And
Yeah. I get approached a lot.
Yeah.
I do get approached a lot, but it's like, nah.
Okay.
I turn it down.
Yeah.
Cool.
I just don't approve of that stuff anyways, you know.
Yeah.
That news by yelling is not, it's made its way over here as well.
Yeah, we get
as a guy who was once a journalist, it offends me. I mean, it's just it's been the destruction of the media, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a 24-hour news cycle sometimes, isn't it?
Yep.
It's killing us. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, when you're working on these pages, there's a section of pages, obviously, doing 250 pages of a comic is hard work. Over two years as well. That's pretty intense.
Think about it. Like, here's my daily quota, here's my weekly quota, and I'm not even going to think about the pile that awaits.
Yeah. Is that how you sort of structured it as well? You had that sort of, I have to, yeah. Because I guess you, it's a job. Let's not forget this, people, even though, you know, a lot of us are hobbyists in some ways, but there are people who have to make deadlines and put out books like this, and you have to set in place these schedules and ways of working. And that obviously, whenever these pages come up, the difficult pages are, I think, when the event happens. Like you say in the book, it was 13 seconds and it's 16 pages of this moment. I can't myself imagine how difficult those pages must have been, because it was awful.
So much going on as well, just in that time.
And, you know, I mean, I know some of the people who were shot, so...
So, when you got to those, did you wait for that? Were those pages towards the end thinking, I need to deal with that last...
No, it was a walk around the block before you start anything, yeah.
Mm. Yeah. No, they were the last ones I did.
Okay.
Yeah. I just kept kicking that can down the road.
Yeah.
Because I knew it was going to be hard, and it was a rough week. Yeah, that was tough.
Yeah.
That was tough.
Yeah. But they're so, I mean... The end result is so
Goya-esque almost, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you've heard us talk about it from the moment to moment movements and stuff. Incredible. Absolutely.
Oh, thanks. In a narrative sense, I mean, it's it's very meaty. I mean, you know, you can really do a lot with visual narrative there.
Yeah.
So in that way, it's really gratifying to do that as an artist. But on the other hand, it's very emotionally very, very tough.
Yeah it must. I mean, when we were talking about it, I know we definitely, especially these moments as well, we looked at it from that the artist's perspective, you know, how you've done bullets flying through the air and stuff. And I think that helps in some ways, because if you think about the actual moment, it's just a nightmare on the page.
Well, I wanted to
break it down.
I wanted people to think about the actual moment.
Yeah.
And these are images that have never been shown before, because they didn't exist.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, we have these incredibly iconic images of, you know, the carnage afterwards, which are some of the greatest news photos of the 20th century.
Yeah.
And before, but when the bullets started flying, most of the photographers very wisely hit the ground. So these images don't really exist, and that's the power of comics, isn't it? Mm. I mean, you can conjure these things up based on facts, based on accounts, based on medical reports or morgue reports, whatever.
Yeah.
And you can actually show exactly how it happened. And I never questioned doing that right from the beginning. And I told people I interviewed, this is what I'm going to do. Because I thought it was so important, because that really erases the argument of the other side that we should have shot more of them, you know, or they shouldn't have been there if they didn't want to get shot. All right. You believe that? Here's what it looks like.
Yeah. It's the truth of being shot, man. Yeah. It's not what people think. Yeah. It's not what we talked about before. Shot. You don't get shot in the shoulder and then you go off and drive a car home. It just doesn't happen. You know,
and these are fearsome weapons. I mean, they were M1s, you know, the bullet was over an inch long.
Yeah.
It could go clean through a foot thick tree trunk.
Yeah.
It could go through five men standing in a row and kill them all.
Yeah, these bullets go through cars. You know, that's what they like. Yeah.
Parking lot full of students. Yeah. So here's what it looks like.
Yeah.
Here's what it looks like when some girl has half her neck blown off.
Yeah.
Or when Jeff Miller has the back of his head blown out. Here's exactly what it looks like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I know it's difficult. I mean, it's, you know,
but
it has
to be. You can't not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
It's exactly what it's.
But your emotion comes straight off the page as well, Durf. That's something we talk about a lot. Is your feeling has got to come off the page, the brutality of it at that moment.
There's, you know, there's pent up rage there. And I think that that's worth depicting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the truth of it, right. speaks volumes as well. You know, just the event of what is happening to the human body as well. I mean, right. certainly when Tony talked about it on the show, and you know, myself and Dan, we're only looking at a couple of pages that he sent us on WhatsApp, just sort of say, wow, look at this, you know, this is what I'm reading. Mm-hmm. It was only when reading the book and seeing all of those pages in between, where you've got a six panel page of different people being injured and being shot, right. that it's like, right. and it's very much, this is what happened to this person, this is what happened to this person, yep. this is, and I was like, my God, this is horrifying. It's horrifying.
Yeah. Good. Good. That's what that's what I intended. I wanted this book to end with a wallop.
Yeah.
I wanted this to be history that was felt in the way that the people who were there felt it and still feel it. That's that was my goal.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the book ends very shortly after the shootings.
Totally.
That's what I leave. There's a lot more story, but you know, that's another story as far as I was concerned.
I think that's a very good narrative choice to end it there, because you're literally, it's the ending that's like everyone's had the air literally just pushed out their lungs by reading it, and then they're left thinking, you know, you're left with what you've just witnessed.
Right. Yeah, that dead air of the world after that happens. Yeah, it's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, that's something that people told me, you know, the people who were there told me over and over again, just how this heavy silence.
Yeah.
So, you know, trying to portray that in comics form is a challenge, but you know, you figure out ways to do it.
Yeah.
And hopefully
he did a fantastic job.
Yeah, and hopefully it will inspire some people that, you know, if their university professor or whatever tells them to read it, you know, they will look into the event more. But what is your hope for the book? Now that it's out in the world, I mean, sales aside, we want it to be gangbusters and you to be calling us from your yacht next time we speak.
That'd be lovely, wouldn't it?
But, you know, when people finish this book, what would you like them? Would you like them to read more into the?
Well, sure. I mean, I'd like them to you know, I like doing books where people get to the end of it and they just sit there and think about it for a few minutes. You know, I mean, that sounds like such a minor thing, but I think it's important. Mm-hmm. And it's a tough thing to achieve.
Yeah.
I know that people told me they did that with My Friend Dahmer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And some people told me they even did that with Trashed because of, you know, the garbage world I depicted there.
Yeah.
Definitely with Kent State, that's what I was shooting for. Yeah. Wow. Shooting. That's stuff, probably man. Not the right.
Yeah.
Not,
okay. Yeah.
Not the
yeah,
correct
yeah,
phrase yeah. to use there.
Yeah.
That was my goal. Let's put it that way.
I mean, are there any other historical? I know you've portrayed Lester Bangs. I'd love to see a book about Lester Bangs by you, man. That'd be brilliant. Yeah.
That'd be great, wouldn't it? Well, there you go. Maybe that's my next book.
You heard it here first. Yeah. Yeah. No, I love that dude.
No, Lester's one of our greats. Yeah, I miss him.
Yeah. Well, I'm a fan of his writing. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this obviously it's a hard year. This is a powerful book, but I think it is. It's definitely, I mean,
that's a bit of a worry, you know. I mean, is this the year to be putting out a book like this? I did think about that, but what can you do? You know, this was just the whole thing just kind of blew up just as the book was getting ready to launch. So this is just what it is.
But you know what? To me, it's important because it gives an explanation. It's not just the event, you know, the world of Twitter where people explain things in just a few words. This like fleshes it out, man. This is like, we understand why it happened to a certain extent. I know it's not fully explainable,
well,
but we see people's actions.
It was always meant to be kind of a caveat, you know.
I mean,
people have to understand, and what the kids of 1970 didn't understand this to, you know, which made it a tragedy. I mean, they didn't even think the guard had loaded guns.
Yeah.
I don't think any of the BLM protesters think that today.
Yeah.
So, you know, Kent State to me is this warning. I mean, if you're going to rise up and really threaten those in power, you know, their response could be lethal. That's not to say we shouldn't rise up. I think we should. But you have to have that in the back of your head that, you know, this I could be in danger here.
Yeah, it is not a social media event, which a lot of people see these sort of things as now in this day and age. But these are
maybe not so much here because you know we have so much street conflict right now. I think that's really moved beyond social media. I mean, we see it playing out. I mean, we had incidents here, a big BLM protest here where I am in Cleveland that went sour.
Right.
And there was a big riot and the police went crazy and it was ugly. So no one has that misconception right now here.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think, you know, maybe other places in the world, they haven't yet experienced that and hopefully never will. But
yeah. Well, I mean, I think this book, I know you're obviously concerned about how it's been released. Well, at the time it's released, but it's a shelf life book as well, though. There are a lot of books that are flavor of the month with your local bookstore and then they're forgotten about. But this is one that I can see people talking about for months ahead, you know, and into next year. You know, people are going to be talking about this and discovering this for a long time to come.
How's the reprint coming? I take it you're going to a second print, are you?
It's third print, yeah.
Third, wow, okay, nice.
Yeah, second and third are on wherever, en route from wherever they're coming from, China, presumably. So they'll be covered in COVID and arriving in the warehouses any week now, yeah. Yeah, so, yeah. It's, you know, it's a nice problem to have. Like I said, I think it would have probably sold better in any other year. But I was hoping it would be, you know, I don't think I'll ever top my friend Dahmer in terms of reaction. But I was hoping, you know, it would be in the same ballpark. But it may not be.
Coming from a company, I work for Nobrow, and we publish a lot of historical figures and stuff like that. And they're big sellers for us, man. They keep selling You know, they're regular strong sellers,
right.
It has the same effect, or will have.
Well, it's the way forward. I mean, I think the comics world is changing so dramatically that the big corporate comics are finally circling the drain. Years overdue. And the rising markets are, you know, kids and youth comics, and then original graphic novels and things
seems
like
to
that.
Be the thing, doesn't it? Does
especially with the likes of Kickstarter, you know, crowdfunding campaigns of
That's a whole different ball of wax. That's completely different. And that's great too. I mean, it's a wonderful time to be a comics fan. There is so much good work coming out.
About 2020 that we're like, we can't go to the local comic book stores. We are drowning in Kickstarters.
Yeah, we're all sitting there drawing and writing comics. It's the good thing.
No, then nothing bad comes from that. And there's such a variety of voices and opinions and experiences. I mean, it's so different than when, you know, I was, you know, 16-year-old comic book nut, and there were like four titles, like, you know, like, and the rest was crap.
What sort of names are you liking in comics at the moment? Whether you know people you met at shows or their work, is there any highlights?
The spud here. Noah Van Sciver is really great.
Nice, I love his stuff, man. Yeah, good.
Yeah. Well, Andy Watson, he's one of yours.
Yeah,
I really like his stuff. Who else? Who am I with?
You must be hooked up with people like Peter Bagg and Fingerman and all those sort of guys. Are they big
to speak to them? I mean, I don't really, because I was doing the weekly strip when those guys were really, you know, flourishing. So I was in kind of a different world.
Okay.
I mean, I've met them, but
which
is fun. I mean, to run into people at shows, I really miss that.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Us too, man. Yeah.
Nate Powell, he puts out like a book a month, it seems.
Yeah.
Bastard. there's some really fabulous creators out there. Yuli Lust, she's got some great stuff. A lot of really good stuff coming out of Europe. Amazing stuff. I mean, you go to Angoulême, it's almost torture because it's all in French.
My French
is very bad, but some of it's never been translated.
So much of it hasn't been. Yeah, I'll be talking about one in a minute that's getting translated.
We've read some digital sort of translations, and I know with a couple of them, I've double dipped on French translations. I can't read a word of it, but I want
those drawings.
I need the books on my.
Yeah. Oh, they're spectacular books. Yeah, I mean, I'd sometimes just buy them just to stare at the.
Us too. Yeah. We are very guilty of that on this show. Yeah. We're friends with Europe Comics, who translate into digital, and then offer as a sort of to other publishers to physically publish. But
yeah, they've started doing some stuff through Dark Horse, haven't they? I think Europe.
Yeah,
Comics,
yeah.
Dark Horse is kind of out front with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's great. I mean, like I said, it's a great time to be a comics fan. They're just coming from everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Every different direction, and it's, you know, I'm really quite jealous of.
We keep telling each other to stop. We're going to stop. We'll have take it easy on Kickstarters for a while, and we never.
Yeah, then we don't. Yeah,
I've never done one, so that's kind of out of my my.
Well,
realm.
They're making some of them are doing $1 million these days.
Yeah,
so.
I know. Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's it. Maybe I should get into it. There, some of those guys are making some big bucks.
Yeah. So what the what your readers would like to know is, it's not going to be another 4 years, is it, until the next one?
Well, I hope not. I mean, it'll be as long as it takes, but it's not going to be another 250-page book, I'll tell you that. That was the problem there. It'll probably be, you know, maybe a 125-page comedy, maybe, and that won't take as long. Good. I flipped around Trash pretty fast. I flipped around and like
love that book, man. I got it in front of me here. Yeah, it's
a
good.
Little over a year, I think. Okay, so it was a really easy one to draw and really easy one to write. So,
How do you write for yourself? Do you do you write like a full script for yourself?
No, it's always thumbnail. I do thumbnails. Okay. So it's like a real, you know, little very, 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 very rough sketch with words and things. And then I take notes and, you know, make all kind of scrawls and let me work stuff out. I mean, it's honestly, it really all comes together in the pencil stage. That's, you know, where it all kind of coalesces. And sometimes I have to redo a scene and it's always right there on the pencil. But you don't want to get to the end and start putting in patches. That's the important thing. I got to redraw that panel. I got to add one here. I got to tear this page apart. That's not what you want to, especially on deadline, that's not what you want to do.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And when you're like lettering, you're lettering digitally, I'm guessing?
It is font based on my hand lettering. My French publisher actually put that together for me.
Oh, wow.
Okay. And then all this, like the sound effects are all hand lettered. That's just kind of fun stuff.
Yeah.
Trashed has great. Well, I won an Eisner for lettering in Trashed.
So Trashed is amazing, man. I was just reading
the
scene.
Was a lot of fun in that one.
Yeah. I was just reading the scene where you're throwing a rat about. That's
No, it's a possum.
Possum. Sorry. Yeah. Okay.
Larger than a rat.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of roadkill in Trashed. Yeah.
Yeah. Good stuff, man. Good.
Yeah.
Well, this has been awesome, as we thought it
Brilliant.
Was going to be.
Yep.
Yes.
No, thanks for having me.
No man, please come back on with me.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to
get the Lester Bangs comic.
Come back in 4 years when I have something new.
Yeah. Well, no, hopefully we'll be able to talk to you either next year or the year after when we when we go for dinner at Thought Bubble.
Thought Bubble, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That'd be great.
Yeah.
We've got a name in a number of restaurants.
Shameless pleeding for it to be invited to Thought Bubble.
No, I'm making a call. I'll tell you now. We're well known in a number of restaurants in Harrogate.
No, that's not what you want to. No, don't lie. Don't lie like that, Tony.
For the wrong reason.
Yeah, no, I'm used to French cooking. So, you know, getting invited to an English festival and having to eat pub grub is going to be a big notch down. I'm sorry, but
we'll take you for a curry. How's that?
The beer's good.
You just haven't been to the right pubs. That's all I've got to say.
Well, actually, I think I have. I mean, if you're comparing them to Paris Cafe, sorry, you're going to come up short.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah. I suppose you're right. Oh well,
this is not going to help our case.
All right. So obviously, a lot of your work is available online, bookstores. Support your indie bookstores if you can.
Yes, you know, please, if you can, support your indie bookstore. Absolutely.
Yeah, get them to order in all of
them. If we don't, there won't be any indie bookstores left.
Yeah. Exactly.
We emerge from the rubble of this pandemic.
Yeah, such as the comic book stores, which you talked about last week as well. So get them to order in Dearth Books.
Absolutely.
And, purchase them. But, where can people find, like, more of your work and, like, where to find you online, et cetera, if they want to find out more?
Dearthcity.com. There's a bunch of stuff there. And then I'm All my old stuff is on a site called Go Comics, which is a big comic strip site. My gosh, it was like 20 years of the city on there.
Oh, brilliant. Okay.
I don't know why you'd want to read 20 years of the city, but it's on there.
Well, I can already hear our listeners clicking on that website
right now. I doubt it. But probably going to Pornhub instead.
you know our listeners so well. Amazing.
X-Hamster is our favourite of it. Also, if you go to derfcity.com, you've got a couple of webcomics that are free to read as well if people want to have a look at your style.
Yeah, there are a couple on there.
Yeah.
So go forth, check out Derf's work and more. And yeah, we look forward to the future work. And I look forward to reading the ones I haven't read yet because I've got to catch up on a couple.
Yeah, they're all fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Love it.
Well, folks, wasn't that good, eh?
Can you
see why we're in such a good mood now?
Yeah.
This show's crazy sometimes because obviously I knew of Derf's work. I know a lot of you people were reading it when I hadn't, and I'm late late to the game, should we say? And I know, but not only is he doing brilliant and powerful work, but he's just a really good guy as well. It was really nice.
He's got a good sense of humor as well. Yeah.
I can't recall who's in charge of it, but in our little comics talk group on Facebook, I can recommend this one be used as a book club book.
Yeah,
that's a good shout. Yeah, I think it's Ian Loxham does it, isn't it?
Ian Loxham.
Yeah. Good old Ian. I was speaking to Ian earlier.
Yes. So we hope you enjoyed that. Now you've got the rest of the nonsense to get on with the episode, but I'm sure there's going to be some comic talk in there somewhere. But first, we've got some shout-outs, haven't we, gents?
Yeah, I've got a few. Can I crack just
loads? Go for it.
Yeah, so, congratulations to 11 O'Clock Comics on 700 episodes.
Yay.
Wow. Almost like, part of our origin as well, because their Vince, as I like to refer to our Vince as being different, they helped us a little bit with setting up and everything. So, and they're mates of mine and they're good eggs. And yeah, congratulations on 700 good episodes. Fair Spark. Sadly, Fair Spark are closing. I'm no longer editing for them. So just to let you know, it's just unfortunately one of those issues with the finance over COVID, which is a real shame. And they put out a lot of good books, which are still there to be ordered. So get on and order them. Help out a little bit. So that's very sad. Our best wishes go out to Aaron and everyone else involved because it was a good game to play for a few years. That one, very good. Congratulations to Steve Holland from Page 45 on his appointment as the 2021 to 2022 Comics Laureate. So congratulations, Steve. Anyone who goes into Page 45 knows what a wonderful shop it is, I'm sure. And what was the other one I'd say? Oh, yeah. So we've got the drink and draw on Friday. So everyone sign up for that this Friday. Honestly, this goes from strength to strength. The last time was just joyous and fairly raucous, it has to be said. Someone described it as coming along, and you don't have to talk, but it being like listening to an episode, which did, I kind of like that. And everyone gets a turn in sharing what they're working on. Everyone gets a turn in sharing what they've got coming out, Kickstarters, new projects, et cetera, like that. So, if you want to come on and just sit there and draw and just listen, then that's fine by us. But it's a really good time, and we all bully Sarah Harris, which always makes me laugh.
I'm going to try and make it to this one. I couldn't make it to the last one, so I'm going to try and make it to this one.
Yeah, do come along, man. There's some new faces last time. I've had a message. Pete Dory, for example, messaged me saying he's definitely coming to the next one because he had a lark. It's a good people on it. And my final one is Atomic Hercules is now on Comixology. If you are the sort of person who didn't want to buy the PDF or didn't come from maybe, I don't know, further afield, didn't want the physical copy, you can find it on Comixology for, I think it's what, 79p or something. Very cheap.
Nice. Yeah, 79p.
Thanks, man. Cheers.
I've got to give a shout out to the Comics Art Lakes Comic Art Festival that was running over this weekend. They did a series of panels and competitions and draw offs, and as far as I'm aware, you can go and look at all the material they've recorded all online.
Yeah, I think you can. I was doing it through Twitter, so I was following their account on Twitter. So I wasn't watching it all live, but I was certainly going back and watching things. Yeah.
If you go to I can't remember the Twitter account, at the Lakes Comic Art Fest. We might have to put that in the show notes, Vince. But it'll be all on their Twitter feed, and I'm sure be able to point you in the right direction where you can see all the various guests and the work that went on the day. So well worth checking out. We're running a new draw off on the Awesome Comic Talk Facebook page, which is this month. It's going to be all about Halloween. So you got from now till Halloween to do something spooky, monstrous.
Even I've done something on that.
Yeah. So get those pens out and get cracking. We're going to knock the comic creation contest on the head because it seemed to kind of be losing a bit of its energy as it rolled on, as I feared it might do. But it was a nice little exercise as it went along, and it's all about
keeping it going. Give it a good go, didn't we? Yeah.
Keeping it creative and keeping those muscles going. But I'd like to, interesting to see what you come up with the Halloween one. I'm going to try and do an alien. I've never drawn aliens before.
Oh, okay.
So there we go.
What are you talking about? Are you talking about like
the xenomorph Geiger?
The xenomorph. Oh, right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I did post up on my Twitter like a thumbnail of what I was going for.
It's quite Freudian, isn't it?
Nice. Yes, I was about to say. Yeah. Or it could be Greg Landian, but that's a completely different.
A little bit of salt there for you.
Yeah, yep. A little bit of salt on your chips. I just want to shout out a Kickstarter, which should be launching today as we speak. If it's not today, there will be a link in the show notes for it anyway. This is for an all-ages comic called Stonewood Mountains. Stonewood Mountains is the adventure of two young friends, Ariel and Jason, Jason's my brother's name. On a fateful camping trip in a mysteriously powerful forest, the trip will challenge their perceptions of reality, their understanding of good and evil, and test their very friendship. The creative team, Kyla Merrill, writer and publisher through Foreign Press Comics, Gabby Scanlon as the line artist, Jake Gustafson awesome. As colorist, and Kevin Lintz as the letterer. Go check this out. And Gabby's
great, man. I was watching her draw. Yeah, really
super
good.
Nice. Yeah. And she sent several emails. There's no mixed messages, Gabby. You are welcome to email us as much as you want.
Yeah, of course.
And we'll probably get you on the show to talk about it. So now you're in contact with us. You'll never hear the last of it.
The thing, people confuse the fact that we don't allow Kickstarters on the Facebook page with the fact that we don't allow Kickstarters at all. We do. If you've got a Kickstarter, then email us in and we'll give you a shout. But we just don't allow them on the Facebook page because it will be a deluge of posts.
Yeah.
No one will post on it other than Kickstarters and no one will be interested in it.
And like sometimes we get tagged on Twitter and social media and stuff about it, and like, you know, we retweet when we can or whatever, but otherwise just, you know, but definitely.
And every two or three weeks I put up a post on the group with a self-promotion one, and
yeah, I think that's a good idea, man.
Post to your heart's content what you've got going on at that time.
And that starts a discussion about it as well, that one, definitely. It was good.
And I think this is Gabby's first Kickstarter, so
good luck.
They're going to
I think you've gone the golden age of Kickstarter. Was really well
the golden age. Oh,
yeah, because everyone's doing them and they seem to be doing really well.
Well, so. Tony's done some, and Dan Butcher might be stepping into the
any room. Moment. And I'll tell you what else. Watch out for Johnny Cannon's about to drop one as well. So sign up for that. Follow Johnny
watch
Cannon
out.
On Twitter.
Cannon's about.
Yeah. So watch out for that. It's I did a little interview with him recently about it. You might hear another one soon, but really good stuff.
That'd be for the United. Is that
it? Is
correct?
Yeah. Welcome to
I've
the
got
shit
some
show.
Original art for that.
Me that's too, bad. Actually.
Yeah. So have
and
I.
He's doing some like one of the pledge levels is like a cover creation thing, and he's just done a Master of Kung Fu, which I will fight people for, honestly.
And I will pay to watch that fight.
Yeah. Stripped to the waist, I will fight you for that cover. Yeah. Might get a bit erotic.
Yeah,
comic book combat. There you go.
CBC. Wow, blimey. Let's make the t-shirts.
Was it? I saw a post from Sarah Harris today about comicbookdating.com. Oh my god, what is that all about?
I don't know.
Who on earth goes on that?
Yeah. Did I?
Oh, it's an actual service.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I wouldn't know where to go on that. Presumably there's just like 99 dudes and like one girl.
Exactly.
might be horribly sexist.
And that's a sort of catfish itself. Person anyway, yeah.
Did you see the thing I sent to you on WhatsApp earlier about Alan Moore?
No. I don't think I read it.
It's just something I saw online that made me laugh. Alan Moore wrote Rorschach.
Oh, yes.
To be Batman in the real world, but didn't realise that... I can't read this out with a straight face. Didn't realise that smelling and not having a girlfriend would come off as heroic to comic fans. And Alan Moore said, fans come up and say, I am. Is it Rorschach?
Yeah.
This is my story. And I'm thinking, could you never come near me again?
Yeah, he's getting some shit around that. And having like watched him give talks and spoken to him very briefly, he's got a sense of humour, that dude.
Yeah.
And it's not including the little sense of humour or the smirk that he's doing while saying it. Get a sense of humour, folks.
Yeah, if you read Watchmen, that character's not someone that you want to be.
Yeah.
What? Yeah. Oh, dear. Don't email me. Anyway.
07974. That's his number.
It's not strictly our realm of our purview, as your word for the week. I watched the trailer for that, The Watch, the Terry Pratchett one. And I've read a few of those books, and it's just like, oh, what's this?
Yeah. I've heard a lot of people sort of going, oh, I mean, in some ways, it's nice people talking about how much they love Terry Pratchett and his work. So
it seems like I really like The Hogfather. Sky did a couple of years ago. That's kind of like synonymous with Christmas for me now. But
I think I need, yeah. Oh no, I haven't seen it. I need to ring the shit accent bell again for the boys. Gets fucking worse.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was bad enough 2 weeks ago. The second to last episode is just
I haven't watched any of it, so I'm going to watch it this week.
Oh, Christ.
One thing I don't understand with that character, Maeve, she's always where she needs to be in the story, but I've no idea how to get there. Do you know what I mean? This suddenly turns up. You're like, oh, you're there. Because the story needs to be. You wouldn't.
Yeah, yeah, that happens. We weren't spoiling thing, but I know what you mean. Yeah.
You wouldn't have
known
what the fuck's going on.
Oh my God, she smokes. What's that all about? There you go.
Yeah.
Bloody hell. What's the world coming to? I'll tell you what this show's coming to.
Oh, here we go.
Recommendations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tony, do you want to go first?
Okay, so I did a book. It's been a few minutes since we spoke about Europe Comics, isn't it? Since Arena left,
we haven't
covered them. So I know they're still our pals, still sending books through. And I've been desperate to read this and find the time to read it because it's 96 pages. Well, it's 90 pages with some sketch pages. It's Gentlemind, which is it's called Gentlemind Episode 1, written by Juan Diaz Canales, Teresa Valero, and art and color by Antoine Lapone. Published by Europe Comics and Comixology and Dargard in French. Juan Diaz Canales, also Black Sad creator, so the writer from that, which is I think it's got a bit of it. It starts in an artist studio in Brooklyn, 1939, and Navit is a woman, quite a sexy lady, and she's been drawn by her artist friend, straight boyfriend at the time, called Arch. He's out hunting for work and traveling the sort of the dirty cold streets of Brooklyn and New York trying to find illustration work. And there's a few little nice Easter eggs in it where you see comics of the era, so Marvel Comics 1 and Action Comics 1 and stuff like that, and he goes to a lot of newsstands, and there's some like just gorgeous pages of the illustrations on the covers of magazines at the time and stuff. But Navit is kind of pragmatic. It's hard times in New York. These are hard times to survive, and she's doing what she needs to survive, and she starts dancing as a sort of Folie Bergère kind of style dancer at Powell's Follies in New York. And you feel that her and Arch are slipping away, that their relationship is beginning to come to an end. She was his muse. He would draw her and the drawings were amazing. And at one point she comes home from one of the club after having to have dinner with the rich millionaire club corporate owner of this place. And he says, will you draw me? And she says, will you draw me? And he just says, it's dark. And it's really a beautiful moment. He gets a job drawing for a newspaper / magazine, and part of it is drawing in court. You know, you get these court artists.
Yes.
Someone once told me they don't actually sit in court, they just do it from memory. Is that true? I don't know.
Wow.
Maybe it's different in America.
Know.
Yeah. And you feel the pair are drifting apart, and they go to Coney Island and have a picture on the boardwalk there and have a picture together. And this is a moment that haunts you because it returns later and you find she goes searching for that picture later. But it's real. It's really utterly beautiful, just incredibly, genuinely just drinking it in. And it's set in wartime New York, but it's done with a touch of the dirt and a touch of the style and a touch of the black and white movie and stuff like that. I mean, at one point, Groucho Marx turns up. So Navit and Arch end up splitting up, and she ends up marrying the millionaire, the businessman who owned the club. And he claims he loves her, but you get that sense of he just wants to own her. He wants to own her beauty. But as they're going to go and do the deed, he strips off and has a heart attack and dies. And after some legal wranglings and stuff like that, she ends up inheriting a magazine, which is called
Gentle Mind, which is where the name of the story comes from. I've got to tell you, this is not a short book. So trust me, I'm not going to summarize the whole thing. I'm going to leave you to find out what happens in it. But she takes out the magazine and she launches it, and she's been left a lot of money, which is soon being eaten into. And she decides to find Arch again, and she finds him, and she goes to see him, and she wants him to draw her. And she walks into his studio, and they're both slightly older, and she takes her clothes off, and he says, and he rebuffs her. He says, "I'll do it from memory, don't worry." And it's this heartbreaking moment. It's just so well done. He just like breaks you. But the drawing that he does do becomes the cover of the first issue, which sells out, of her kneeling down, slightly sort of saucy, looking at you over her shoulder sort of thing. And it's the story about them. It's the story about a lawyer who she becomes friends with and enters a relationship with her. And it's, there's no simple storytelling here. It really does remind me of a black and white, almost noirish melodrama. You know, there's that, just the society moments and people fighting to survive and doing what they must during this sort of dark period. But the art is utterly something else. Just absolutely beautiful. To me, it's almost a little homage to spot illustrations you got in magazines, maybe of the time up until the 60s or 70s. Rough caricaturish, but very, very cool cartoons. There's a moment where the artist does a double page spread of an old school boardroom with and it's a double page spread that is just absolutely full of detail. So you get all these men, all a different character, all with their own personality coming up off the page, young, old, all sitting around this big table. On the middle of the table are, I don't know, just shit like phones and pencil sharpeners and old magazines and stuff like that. And you can see out the window into Madison Avenue, and it's snowing on the big bill, you know, the big office blocks about Madison Avenue. It's there's a touch of the Mad Men about it, I suppose, if you want to go there with that as well. But it's got that, it sits between that illustration style, that caricature style, but also the work of maybe Jay Bone or Bruce Timm or Darwin Cook, something around there. If you get that visually in your head. Now, yeah. We all know that Bruce Timm had quite a sort of naughty side to him, didn't he? Bruce Timm, who's probably most famous for the Batman stuff, but he does quite a lot of saucy girls, doesn't he? He draws quite a lot of saucy girls in poses and stuff, and it's very like that. But it's got that classy, cheeky combo thing going on. Occasionally I rush through comics that I read digitally. I'm not sure what you're like, but I thought I'm going to read this. I left it to this afternoon to review, and I've been meaning to talk about it on the show for a couple of weeks, and I began to read it, and I have to admit at the start, I began to say, well, who's that? Because it jumps about in time a little bit, but I just thought, no, I'm not going to worry about that. I'm just going to sit back and enjoy it. And I sat back and read it, and it really does unfold as you go through. As I say, at the back, it ends at about, I think, about 90 pages in the back. You get a lot of Lapone's work in the back of sketches and stuff. And just really, really beautiful stuff. Another one, I know we were just talking with Durf about it, weren't we, about, I wish I could have a real copy of this. I don't know whether there's a company that will, in these troubled times, will have the brave head to put their head above and say, I'll publish this, but I wish they would. Antonio Lapone is an Italian artist who also started working in advertising, so that kind of fits. And Teresa Valero, who assists Juan Diaz Canales in the writing, also worked on Tintin, the TV series, the Pink Panther TV series, and Asterix in America. So it's got quite a content of people know what they're doing, know what they're talking about. And it's called Episode One, so I'm guessing there must be something else on its way. I must email back Europe Comics if there's something else coming through. But it's very cool. It's very iconic. It's very styled. The cover could possibly have the cover of the actual book could have like a sort of fashion magazine, maybe Esquire or something like that. It's got a touch of that about it. Yeah. Yeah. Just lovely. Absolutely. What a lovely afternoon reading this. So 96 pages. Good long read. Lots in it. But yeah, highly recommended. Really good.
Nice. Okay. I've got one that we kind of... We talked about a couple of episodes ago. We had the guests on to talk about the book. We didn't normally, when we do that, we talk about the book and then have the guest on, but we kind of haven't reviewed it. And I just wanted to talk a bit about Breakwater by Katrina Chapman.
Oh yes, man. Okay, cool. Yeah.
Because I know myself and Dan, I mean, we'd all read it, but since it's been published. We got the printed copies, and it's another one that I when we were talking about it on the show as well with Kat, there were certain moments, like as we discussed, we realized the layers that this book has, the story and how it breaks down and stuff, and there's so much more to it. And having a printed book in your hand also adds another level to it, because we love the printed book. But for those who don't know, this is the story. A loner and an introvert, Chris has drifted through her job in the cinema for many years. When Dan joins, he gradually becomes a part of her life. But as they grow closer, she must decide if the solitary life she's built is the one she's actually most suited to after all. Now, this is... I haven't got pages, but this is a decent-sized book from printed by Avery Hill. Just go out and get it. And episode 268, we talked about it in depth, about the process of it. But I kind of just want to go back and look, now that I've actually got the printed copy in my hands, just some of the things that I appreciate it about it from another level, when, like when you see the printed book. Because sometimes when we talk about books on these shows, we've only seen a PDF. Yes, we've loved it, because comics is comics. But when you can actually sit down and read it, you know, you realise that instead of it being on your screen, it is now A5 size. It is A4. It is oversized comic book size. And for me, Breakwater just gets even better printed. I don't know whether it's
the smell
of the print alone, but because it's a black and white
book. I love
a
black and white book, mate. I love a black and white book.
Yeah.
And Kat's work is very, even though a lot of this is digital, it's all digital, I think, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
But it's got this real natural pencil shading. It feels like, you know, there's a softness to it, which, you know, to the shading and the characters. And even the borders, you know, there are no sharp lines in this book, both in the way it's in the visuals and, I think, in its way of telling this story. Because it's a very sort of personal story. I know it's her first fictionalized work, but you wouldn't know it because it feels very autobiographical.
No, very accomplished.
Yeah, very accomplished. I've said it before. It feels like a... Was it a Mike Lee film? Is that what I...
Yeah, that's what you said.
I can dig that, man, yeah.
Yeah, when you're dropped into a moment in someone's life and you live those days with this character, you get to know them. You know, there are some powerful moments in it, and I don't want to spoil any of these moments because they usually happen in second time we talked about this week, the power of the splash page. The splash pages in here, whether it be like a group of just workers who, we've all had those moments where you just sat around on a lunch break and you're having a laugh, and she's captured that moment. So, and without any words on the page, you know exactly what the feeling is. Or there's a powerful moment later in the book where something sad happens, and that's ultra powerful. One of my favourite pages of part of the cinema, which is old and decrepit, and there's a screen like peeling off, you know, one of the screens is sort of falling apart, basically.
And, that's become truer recently, isn't it, that one?
Yeah. And there's these two doves. I mean, when you see a dove, you imagine there's going to be a John Woo shootout that happens shortly afterwards. But in this, it's just so many pages of this I would love as a print. Now, I know when I ordered this, I'm sure you're the same, Dan. Did you get the limited edition?
I did indeed, yeah. The little book plate.
Yeah, the little book plate as well. Which essentially just doubles up as another lovely bit of art to put in a frame. So it's another one that's going to go in my wall. This book plate, but I would love, there are so many pages in this narratively away from it that are just, you could just sell them as prints, Kat, like literally, you know, I could, there's a final page of just the sea and the sun, I think it's a sunset,
right?
It's really near the back of the book, and I kind of would love that. I mean, I'd love that as an A2 print. I know it's not made to be A2, but something like that in a frame. It's a beautiful piece of work from a hugely accomplished creator who is very, very humble.
And I think it was her birthday this week, wasn't it?
Oh, happy birthday.
It was.
Happy birthday. Happy birthday. And another thing I want to say, because obviously we talk about the narrative, it's very well written, the storytelling, the character stuff. I just want to, and I don't think this is something we talked about in the show either, as a designer, she's very, very good. Just in the way the pages are laid out, the cover, the back cover, especially where you have like the text of a book. Being a designer myself, I sometimes know, you know, my eye is drawn to these sort of things. So the layout of the back of the book is hugely appealing to me, like massively appealing to me. The blurb on the back of the book is not a throwaway page, people. Some people don't think about this and just have like just nothing. Whereas this is another bit of art in itself. It's like a tickets kiosk and just everything. I just love this book. The more I look at this book, the better it gets. And how many books can you say that about? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And also when you think about the story afterwards, it's well worth checking. I mean, I've got another book that I will be talking about on the show. In fact, we might be talking with the creator very soon on the show that a lot of people on the internet have been talking about, from Avery Hill. But yeah, go to Avery Hill. I think it's averyhill.bigcartel.com, I think.
Where you I think you're right, man. Yeah, I think it is. Yeah.
Books. Yeah, they always put out great indie books, and yeah, they know us and the nonsense we talk, but they genuinely put out great books, and this is another one. I think the only thing I can say about it, and this is just a selfish first world problem, why can't I have this? Would have been a lovely hardcover.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Well, her last book was, wasn't it? I'm surprised she didn't go with a hardcover. Yeah. After Follow Me In, which was a hardcover off the top of my head,
which is another spectacular book. So yeah, Breakwater. Another one that should be in a lot of people's lists at the end of the year.
Definitely.
Cool. Yeah.
And Dan.
Yeah, I didn't read. I always reading something, but this week I went back to an older title. I was reading through the Nemesis collection of the early when Nemesis popped up in 2000 AD. And this is the start of it.
The Kev O'Neill stuff, yeah.
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 Just to clarify, not that Mark Miller one.
No.
All the DC one.
Yeah.
This,
I can remember reading this as a kid and being like genuinely quite kind of intimidated by both Torquemada and Nemesis. Like, it's the art style of Kevin O'Neill really was kind of like fucking hell. Like, when
it's,
I was a kid.
It's extreme, isn't it? It's,
yeah.
I mean, he's apparently the only artist ever to be banned by DC just because of his style.
Interesting.
They said it was frightening. Yeah.
I can understand that. Yeah. I mean, God,
a lot of my early memories of 2000 AD are based on his artwork fucking frightening me. I've got to tell you, yeah.
Every single world that he creates is one that I would never want to be in. That it's like a nightmarish kind of reality. And in that, there's a horrible... So you're living under this kind of fascist dictatorship run by Torquemada where they're constantly hunting aliens, or the aliens where you're constantly being hunted by Torquemada. And it's... Not great in either way, but like the battle between the two characters, as it starts off, I see more of the Torquemada as the bad guy and Nemesis is very much the good guy. But I think that changes a little where they're both sort of relatively unlikable. Am I correct in thinking that? That's why I always read it as.
Yeah, it's no one's likable, are they? Even the ABC Warriors and Roadbusters, nobody's particularly likable in that Mills verse, which Anna now links up, doesn't it? So it goes from Invasion and Savage all the way through, doesn't it? Yeah.
One of the things I really like is when Nemesis and his other half is introduced, they're like the four-legged part of his race. The females have four legs and they're the most powerful, dominant ones, and they fight over the males. Which was a nice little touch, and considering when the comic was put out, I think that was quite forward thinking and probably something that wasn't done at the time. So once again, just to sort of fluff Pat, how great Pat Mills a writer is.
Speaking of someone who came from the fascistic control of actual Torquemada, who's based on, it's an amazing book. I reread it about 4 or 5 years ago, I think, and I was just enraptured with how complicated and how clever it was for a comic that was in a sea of comics that were a lot stupider than it. 2000 AD really had something, didn't it? It was really incredible back then.
Yeah, it's so many levels to it. And it's one of those kind of comics that you pick up again and it's got something much like Duff Batdurst's book. You can pick it up 5 years down the line and it's still got something to say about what's going on in the world. And then it's all there in Nemesis. So
I subscribed this week. I took the the plunge and subscribed back on 2000 AD this week. So I'm getting through the mail. Yeah, I'm not too impressed by the recent issue, but I'm going to hang on.
Yeah, see how it goes.
Yeah.
I keep on wanting to resubscribe to Viz as opposed to just getting the yearly annuals.
Yeah.
But we'll see. We'll see.
Maybe I'll give a little, I'll do it for a couple of months and then give a little summary of how I felt about it. Might be a,
yeah, that's a good idea.
Exercise. Yeah.
Do you have to do like a year's subscription?
Or? I do it by pay per month.
Gotcha.
You can do a yearly. Yeah.
Yeah. Because you get a discounted rate and you get free goodies if you do.
Yeah. I think you
yearly
do.
Subs.
Yeah.
Why did you say it like that, Dan?
Yearly subs.
I see the second volume of the Trigon Empire is coming out soon, and that's a hell of a book. So I'll be getting that.
Fantastic.
As well. Yeah.
Nice. And what else has been fantastic has been this week's episode.
It has.
So we hope you enjoyed what we've talked about this week, the interview, the books we've talked about. There's many more amazing indie books to come. There's a lot of books that I've been meaning to talk about, but I'm still halfway through reading a lot of books.
Yeah, me too. I've got some Kickstarter awards that I just need to talk about, yeah.
I've got a whole fucking shelf of books ready to review and read.
And when we say books, we're actually meaning books, because more and more now, they're full-on, like, 100-page books, 90-page books, something like that.
Gone are the days. You remember when we say what we're going to review this week and we'd be reviewing a 20-page comic?
Yeah.
These days, they're all like 90-odd pages at least.
I feel bad for not doing one justice, because I want to give it a good read through and then, like, collect my thoughts. I've got Pirates versus Knights versus Pirates coming through.
Yes, soon-ish. I've got a digital copy of that. Yeah, it looks great.
Nice.
I know, in the future for me, there's... because, as you know, I'm metal as fuck. there's the final book of the Legion of the Damned. The ones I've talked about before in the past.
Okay. And we've got the John Tucker murder one.
God. So much Berserker. To come and to talk about.
I've got a comic coming from Tim Truman.
Nice.
No, don't hold him. No, don't no, hold him. That. No, that don't get him to think about that, because he'll get upset. but you lovely people,
never gonna do that.
Hopefully you're not upset, you're okay, and you enjoy this week's episode. If there's anything you want us to talk about, for instance, if you've got a Kickstarter you want us to just shout out on the show,
then Kickstarter event, let us know. We're happy to promote it.
And see you at the Drink and Draw
this Friday.
And if you want to know more about any of that, you can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. We'll try to get back to you as soon as possible. Sometimes we only get time to just sort of read them, but thank you anyway. So get in touch with us. Follow us on Twitter @TheAwesomePod, where we'll be announcing future guests. Just sharing the love of comics, and just talking about stuff like that. If you do the Book of Faces, go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. We mentioned it a little bit earlier in the show, but please join if you're on Facebook. Stay away from everything else and join the community group Awesome Comics Talk, because it's just readers, creators, shop owners, festival runners, whoever. They're just an amazing group of people that just want to talk about comics. So especially if you're making a comic for the first time and you want any advice on anything, just shout it out there. You will get a response and advice that you don't have to take, you know. It's just everyone's view on things. It's really helpful for a lot of people. Definitely join that
get
group.
Drawing as well. Get on there and get drawing. That's what I'm doing.
Exactly. Tony's drawing more. Me and Dan have seen a little bit that Tony's been drawing recently.
Somebody asked me to draw something for them this week. Told you, didn't I?
Yes.
So I said to you guys, I'm going to draw this five times, and this person will be getting the fifth version of it, because whilst I refused payment, he said he gave some money to the Dogs Trust, so I had to make the best of it. So
got better every time. I think you nailed it at the last one.
Thank you, Mr. Bunce.
You gave him away, the anonymous benefactor.
Oh yeah, you two got to do one as well.
I know.
Yeah.
You might see more of that in the future. And you will see and hear more episodes of this if you go to the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us there, thank you. If you listen to us on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife, what other networks are we on, Tony?
We're on Pod, you got some in my mouth.
Damn it. I don't want to laugh. Sometimes I don't want to laugh at people.
It's what you said earlier. I'm only telling you what you said earlier.
No, I didn't say that earlier. What are you talking about?
You said something about something splashing about.
No.
from.
Don't.
That was a callback. That was the joke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
I'm not sure if that made it into the show, though.
No, it didn't. So essentially, he's just.
Who knows these days? Just, he might put it
it's
there.
It's a hideous slur on my good name. No, you know I
hideous
don't.
Hideous slur on your name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where can people, speaking of hideous slurs, where can people find us online, etc., Tony?
tributepress.bigcartel.com or Comixology, just look my name up, or Adam Phelps' name, or Atomic Hercules, and you'll find our new range of comics.
79p. Nice. You there cannot, you know, beat that for a comic.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Where I kill someone with a willy.
Yeah.
And there's a comic. Dan, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com. I'm on the last five pages. A big surprise coming up at the end.
Oh.
You're going to want to be there.
Nice.
Oh. Anyone is going to shock. Anyone who's read your comics, Dan, already knows they can never prepare for anything you're about to do.
Shock.
I'm not saying, but it's a certain character based on your good lady.
Which one? We're going after.
Yeah, we yeah, okay, we'll do, yeah, we'll do, ask, do,
yeah.
do it.
Yeah, yeah.
The enemy might be listening.
Did you just say the enemy?
Yeah. I'm not saying what that is, but
just in case.
Just in case.
If you want to find my ramblings and a picture of my cat and some artwork, which I will be posting soon, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram. I've forgotten what it was then. At Jester Diablo. Thank you very much for listening. Thanks to Durf once more for joining us this week.
Yeah.
Happened pretty quickly. Social media was good for something.
Yes.
And we hope you enjoy this episode. And wherever you are, the world's a bit of a mad place, so we hope for the past couple of hours we have enjoyed, you've been entertained, laughed, learned something, and also we hope you're all okay, because we love you, don't we, guys?
Yeah.
We do.
Hope you're doing well.
Say it, Tony. Tell them you love them.
I don't love them.
No. You do?
Well, I love a couple of them.
Dirty laugh, Dan.
Tony wrote an article, a new article today. I'd recommend checking that.
Oh,
that
thank
out
you, mate. Well. Yeah,
yes.
Never on anything.blogspot.
Well, while Dan's brain is shutting down, never on anything.
I just had a stroke on show.
No, yeah. Don't do that, Dan. Don't do that. That's disgusting. Thank God the webcam's not on. Anyway, thank you for listening. We hope you're all right wherever you are. Go forth, make lots of comics, read lots of comics. Just read up about some important stuff. We talked about important stuff this week. We do it occasionally, and then we ruin it by
surrounding... next week. I can't remember now.
Definitely.
Oh well, you'll find out soon enough.
Yeah.
But for now, from Dan, Tony, and myself, have a brilliant week. Stay lovely. We know you are. And what else do they do?
Stay awesome.
Stay awesome.
Oh, it's competitive. Dan.
I was a little slow there.
You were a little slow. Tony was in a different time zone.
A bit early. Yeah. It's a bit, yeah.
You need to calm yourself,
a bit
Tony.
An issue of mine before.
Yeah. Don't go too soon.
Popping off too early.
Mm. Yeah. We better pop off now.
Hey.
Bye, everyone.
See ya.